So, Vayikra starts. HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls Moshe in front of the entire nation. We're told the Mishkan is set up. They can see the Shekhinah is, resting over the Mishkan, probably the cloud, right? And people realize the Shekhinah is there. All of Klal Yisroel now stood around the Mishkan, I guess basically, enjoying what they've now accomplished, because we learned last week that this was the culmination of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had previously told Moshe Rabbeinu that the Ohel Moed, that the tent, was going to be the spot where Moshe would communicate with the Rabbono Shel Olam. But Moshe did not on his own walk in. It says, usually when an individual is well acquainted with a head of state and has a special relationship, they don't feel reluctant to walk into the royal presence. I mean, they'll likely say, Your Majesty, Your Lord, whatever. Moshe said, no. It says, his level of anivus, humility, said to himself, he said, self, yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has selected me to lead Klal Yisroel. But that was yesterday. Every day is a brand new test. And how do I know that I'm still on the level of being able to continue to lead? Now that there's a Mishkan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have found a more suitable representative to carry on from now. They also said, the Targum Yonason says, Moshe had the following logical thought. When the Torah was given on Sinai, right, there was a special Kedusha because of that awesome event. And even though the greatness of Sinai was a temporary phenomena, right? I needed to get permission to go up. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has told us that my Shekhinah dwells in the Mishkan, meaning that the Mishkan is a spot of permanence. If I needed permission to go to a place with temporary Kedusha, how much more so do I need permission to go somewhere where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is clearly omnipresent? We're told that Moshe's anivus was a permanent feature of his thought pattern governing his actions. And it says, when Moshe was asked by Hashem on Sinai initially at the burning bush to take on the mantle of leadership, he said, send someone better than I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Until the Rabbeinu Shel Olam said, Moshe, if it's not you, no one's taking them out. It says when Moshe was told that he would be giving messages to Paro, again he waited for a specific commandment from the Rabbono Shel Olam as to where and when to go. Also, they say that at the shore of the Yamsuf, Moshe did not assume that he would be the one to be instrumental in the crossing of the Yamsuf, and he didn't take an active leadership role immediately. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Moshe, the task of splitting the Yamsuf is in your hands. I have given that responsibility to only you. Lift up your rod, your mateh, and split it. Again, at Har Sinai, as we mentioned, Moshe waited to be invited up to the mountain. Now, at the completion of the Mishkan, Moshe again said, Aaron was chosen as Kohen Gadol. Perhaps it is he, rather than I, who will be the first one to enter the Mishkan. It says, Vayikra el Moshe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the special honor to Moshe by calling Moshe first and only Moshe to the Mishkan. In front of the Mishkan stood Tzadikim who were incomparable. Aaron HaKohen, the 70 Zakenim, Uri, Bezalel, the Nesiim of the tribes, and all the people. And everyone heard in some way HaKadosh Baruch Hu calling, Moshe, you are you alone, come. It says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in some ways consoling Moshe, because Moshe, by having been given the task to be the administrator, the collector of everything for the Mishkan, right, did not actually give anything of his own property. Why, I don't know, but it says it here in the Medrash. Hashem wanted from Moshe the first entry into the Mishkan. Why did Hashem not allow Moshe to give a physical donation of material item to the Mishkan? It said the Mishkan, if we go according, right? We go according to Rashi's Pshat, that it happened after the Egel, it was an atonement object, creation, to take away the sin of the Egel. And every object donated by the people was in some way to take away what had happened with donations to the Egel. And Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, was on Har Sinai. He wasn't involved. And whatever this means, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbin was that if Moshe gave something, since they were only going to have, you know, the exact amount, it would have precluded someone else from giving and somehow precluded that individual from attaining the proper atonement. The other thing is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted a distinction between that what was given to the Mishkan and that which Moshe gave, we'll have to say intangibly, to the people. Hashem said, Moshe, everyone in Klal Yisroel has a task assigned to them that I gave them. Yours is different than theirs. They have now finished giving to the Mishkan so that it can stand. Your task of, I would say, consecrating the Mishkan begins right now. You are going to somehow take a completed structure, right? And you're going to get it to operate. You're going to teach everyone the halachos of the Mishkan, of the korbanos, etc. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu seemed to utter the words that we say, Tov li Torah picha me'alfei zohav v'chesed. The words of Torah are more dear to the Ribbono Shel Olam than thousands of talents of gold and silver. King Shlomo says in Mishle, there is gold, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a multitude of pearls and jewels, but the most precious vessel, are the lips of knowledge, meaning Torah knowledge. Shlomo tried to teach when he, and I guess that's reason for his Koheles, Hevle Havolim, and others, is that the back-breaking attempt to accumulate gold, silver, and materials is not the ideal way to live a Jewish life. The ideal way is to realize that Torah is the most important thing. And the other thing that the Mephorshim point out is that Torah is something that we have to work on all the time. They say Torah learning is like the rung of a ladder. It's very hard to stay on one rung for long. You've got to go up or down. And so Torah requires not a one-time donation. It requires a consistent effort to learn. Moshe, we know, was the greatest of all those who ever studied Torah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls Moshe and Moshe alone. Hashem says, Moshe, Moshe. And Moshe says, Hineini, here I am. The double calling is an indication of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love and concern for Moshe, and to encourage him to go on in serving Hashem. Although the voice, it says, resounded loudly, went from the Keruvim of the Arayin to the outside of the tent, no one besides Moshe, not even Aaron, heard the initial sound. But people were looking at Moshe Rabbeinu, and it says that his faith was visibly connecting and communicating with Hashem. It says, as soon as HaKadosh Baruch Hu addressed Moshe, it says his face turned bright, bright red, and began to radiate light as if it were a massive fire. It says the divine voice was the same, it says, blasting, soul-rending voice at Har Sinai, which had made, right, animals give babies, rendered cedar trees to split, and created some type of earthquakes, and causing Klal Yisroel, as we said, they all, when they heard the first two commandments, they parted. Their souls left them because that level of Kedusha was so great and they had to be restored to life. And the people realized that Moshe was able to enter into conversation with the Rabbona Shalom, in spite of them being aware, I would say, of the same awe that they had at Har Sinai, where they couldn't withstand it. It says, when Hashem dictated the Torah to Moshe and told him to record the words Vayikra, that God called Moshe and Moshe alone, Moshe was reluctant. The last thing he wanted to do was to create an everlasting record of how he was treated in a special manner. And he said, Rabbeinu Shalom, is it really necessary to record the first word in Vayikra indicating that you called me and me alone into the Mikdash? Can I somehow change the word? Doesn't say what he wanted to change it to. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, the Torah has to have the word Vayikra. But if you want, I will allow you to put a small aleph at the end. So when you first look at it, it'll say Vayikar, which is a term that I guess is used in Tanakh in reference to a Kadosh Baruch Hu dealing with non-Jewish prophets. Bilam, it says God happened, Vayikar on Bilam. He says, I'll let you in some way diminish the absolute respect that the word Vayikra in full would create. And so it becomes, as we know now, a monument to Moshe's anivas, to Moshe's feeling of humble. And the Medrash says, I want to reiterate, God, Vayikar, God happens upon Goyish prophets. They're out, they can't stand. They've got, it's right there, they cannot stand up and talk to Hashem. Moshe was able to take HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shechina appearance, stand, radiate the light. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to let you write Vayikra with a small aleph, but this is going to indicate how much you humbled yourself and considered yourself small. And as somebody said, Moshe Rabbeinu never doubted what Hashem had imbued him to do. But he attributed all to the Rabbeinu Shlaila. Moshe knew that if he could beat Oig, it wasn't him. He was no different than a lightning strike being sent for to knock out a giant. Moshe realized that whatever he had came from Hashem and had to be used in that fashion. It says the small olive also has another purpose. It hints at the fact that as great as this communication that Moshe was, and as much as it indicated the beginning of the Shekhinah, right? Coming to the Mishkan and the allowance for the beginning of the Avodah that would occur, this was only the start. There would be a Beis HaMikdash, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu refers to as HaMakom, the very place where the Shekhinah is to be in Yerushalayim. The perfect level of simcha in dedicating the bayis would only occur when King Shlomo dedicated the first Beis HaMikdash. The call to Moshe here was in the desert. It was chutz l'aretz, on foreign land. It was also in a structure that was tent-like, a temporary Mishkan. And the small aleph therefore indicates that there is growth required. There's going to be a greater Makom Hashem, right, coming later. And yet, while we say that the Mishkan did not have, I would say, the same grandeur as the Beis HaMikdash, we know that every part of the Mishkan was hidden under the Harabayis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu never allowed anything from the Mishkan ever to be used by a non-Jew or to be conquered by a non-Jew. So we can appreciate the type of Kedusha that Moshe and his generation imbued into this Mishkan. And the question that people ask is, Hey Rabbi Yomeinu, when Mashiach comes, will Klal Yisrael be able to once again perceive? Will we be able to see the Mishkan? Will we be able to feel the innate holiness in it? And I haven't seen anybody answer that, but maybe someone does. HaKadosh Baruch Hu then tells Moshe about how there is going to be korbanos, sacrifices brought in the Mishkan, and of course later on in the Beis HaMikdash, and that there are going to be a number of steps involved. The first is you had to bring a perfect animal to the Azorah, the courtyard of the sanctuary. And this was, I guess, a special mitzvah, right? We know that there are going to be korbanos that are shlomim, that are voluntary. as well as there are going to be korbanos that are mandatory. What the right? The most right? The first one we know is the korban Pesach that every family had to bring once a year. With the korbanos, there were a number of steps involved. A personal sacrifice had to have smicha. The owner rested all their weight on the head of the animal. There could be vidui, confession, right? If it was to be a chatos, to atone for a sin. The animal was shechted, its lifeblood, the first blood coming from its neck, was captured. That's called Kabbalas Hadam, receiving the blood. And this was caught in a special klishores, a special sacred pan which had been designated for this. A Kohen would then take this pan, walk to the Mizbeach, and depending on the type of korban it was, would either sprinkle, dash, or apply blood to the outer Mizbeach. And we're told, and we can, if you read Ezehu Mekoimon in Shachris, it tells you the shiore hadam. Where'd the rest of the blood go in the basin? Right? The thing that didn't get on the wall. That was poured into two holes, one on the extreme west and one on the extreme south of the Mizbeach. There were two little holes. If the right, the next thing was that the korban would then be cut up, right? And it would be cleaned thoroughly, and then it would be salted, because it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked that salt go on the Mizbeach, and lastly, it then would be burnt in fire on the Mizbeach. Okay.